Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Yeah. I just spent almost the entire third period. I didn't know the outcome. I got to the game late, but I just could barely stand to watch it, Bruce. They just have such an inability to score goals, this team. And there's such a small margin for error in the games. Of course, they lost 3-1 to the Penguins. In the whole third period, Bruce, what do they have? One grade A scoring chance the whole third period. And of course, it was McDavid and Draisaitl who are in on it.
Of course.
They just have no ability to generate anything, and I'm just tired, especially tired of watching the defense and their inability to move the puck. And anyway, so we're doing our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast on the Oilers loss to the Penguins. I'll tell you my good thing. I'm just going to take a pass. I can't think of anything that I like that was very good.
Oh, wow.
So what was your good thing?
Well, I got to go with the Oilers goal, the goal. Beauty play by possibly Edmonton's three best players, certainly three of their exceedingly short list of good players. First of all, Oscar Klefbom, who took some serious punishment in getting hit into the boards while reversing the puck and starting the transition play that caught Pittsburgh going the wrong way. Set McDavid and Draisaitl in 2-on-1, and that followed with a superb inch-perfect pass from McDavid and a superb inch-perfect shot from Draisaitl, which was the only shot all night that managed to beat the red-hot Matt Murray, the latest goalie to have Oilers' number in the NHL, who made a number of fine saves, but that was an unstoppable drive by Leon. Just a pretty play all the way around. That's how you like to see goals scored, at least some of them.
That was a good play. Actually, I do have a good thing. I don't know. Koskinen made a few good saves, but because he let in a stinker, I can't really focus on that. But I thought that Klefbom and Larson, even though Klefbom's coming back, I thought they looked okay. Which for an Oilers defensive pairing seems like, that's saying a lot. Larson battled really hard against Crosby all night.
10 minutes against Crosby, Larson did, and gave him nothing.
Yeah. He really battled hard.
Other than that elbow he gave him that got landed in the penalty box, I guess.
But. And they were out for a few big scoring chances against, but I thought they played well. It's nice to see Klefbom back. Hopefully next year he can be healthy all season long, and hopefully next year he'll have more help in the puck moving department. I don't know Chiarelli is responsible for Manning and Petrovic coming to the team, but there's some talk that Hitchcock was involved in this too, involved in the Manning decision. And that was exactly the wrong prescription for the team at the time, it turns out. Just like the Ryan Strome trade, exactly the wrong prescription. But anyone watching this team for the last few years just knows they just need some defenseman who can move the puck. And I guess they tried to bring Weidman in, and that was supposed to be his forte, and he just flubbed it. Totally useless. But it's just so frustrating to watch this defensive group. So,
Weidman actually had some good offensive metrics, but he got clobbered defensively, so it did, made it irrelevant. But he did actually do some things offensively, just not enough to.
And they gave up a third pick for Petrovic, right? Like he can't play.
I thought tonight was by far his best game as an Oiler, which is to say he was all the way up to mediocre.
All right, my bad thing will be the shorthanded goal against, which was the killer. And again, there's so little margin for error with the Oilers. You can't afford to have any kind of mistake like that. And the goalie flub a goal against, and Koskinen certainly flubbed that. But it started with, you know, a turnover in the offensive zone by McDavid. Then the most kind of lackadaisical defensive coverage you'll see floating around. And McDavid was part of it. He didn't take the guy on his side of the ice. I mean, Nurse was kind of, you know, he could have gone into the corner, I guess, but he's thinking there's this other guy down low too, and they're not going to score from the corner. But it was just terrible defensive coverage, terrible goaltending on that particular play, which ruined an otherwise pretty good night for Mikko Koskinen.
Yeah, he was pretty good, but you know, that was the exact same goal that killed him in Montreal when Kotkaniemi was on the other side of the net on the on the stick side. But the same thing, the puck was below the goal line. He didn't get over to the point, to the post, and the guy was able to squeeze one in on the short side, and the exact same thing happened here. That was really weak and very disappointing. I just, you know, it seems like every night there's at least one grade B chance that winds up in Oilers' net. And when you lose a one-goal game, it's pretty hard not to look back at that play and point a finger at it. I mean, Edmonton had played a pretty good first period, come out with a 1-0 lead, and they pissed it all away in about 10 seconds of brain-dead hockey by basically the whole everybody on the ice there for those few seconds. It was just...
What's your bad thing, Bruce?
Well, I almost hate to go here, but I'm going to. McDavid, defensive zone coverage.
And yeah, his worst game of the year.
Not just that tying goal where he coughed the puck up and then he got lost. I mean, I counted, if you really wanted to split hairs, three different coverage errors in succession where he didn't hustle back to cut off the lane on the 3-on-2, where he floated too deep past the potential shooter to the edge of his own crease while they had one great chance that narrowly missed the net. And then the soft coverage on the side of the net where the guy came out and scored. Like, that was all in rapid succession, and he was just in the wrong place. And if that was the lone mistake, well, that'd be fine. But I see by your count, he had five mistakes on grade A scoring chances against. And included among that number was a particularly bad play on the game-winning goal when the goal scorer, a guy named Teddy Bluger, I think it was, blew past McDavid, who had him covered, and they just let him go, and he just went to the front of the net, and the rebound got coughed up out there, and bang, and it went, and that was it.
Yeah, it was a bit of a lucky play. It goes off the side of the net.
I think it went off Koskinen, actually.
Oh, maybe it did. I thought it went off the side of the net out front and lands. But McDavid, that was McDavid's man. He's got to stick with him, and
you could argue Draisaitl could have picked him up, but Draisaitl was covering somebody else on the play. He was covering Letang on the high spot, the high slot, and McDavid just let him go. And I mean, for all that he did in the game that was wonderful and entertaining and, you know, great speed and skill and robbed by Murray on great chances to tie the game, first on a penalty shot, then on a right in tight alone against the goalie in the third period, Oilers' two best chances. Fact is, he didn't convert those, and the two sort of nothing defensive plays where he slacked off for, you know, a second here or there wound up in two goals in a 2-1 loss. I mean, that's a little bit hard to accept, frankly. You know, it was a big game where it was a showdown between him and Sid. I didn't see Sid making mistakes like that. And, right now, that's the difference between those two. I mean, obviously, Sid's 10 years older, and he's learned some hard lessons along the way. But great defensive play is part of his game and is yet to become part of Connor McDavid's game. And I'm confident that it will, but he really needs to focus on the 200-foot game.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been an okay defensive center since he got into the NHL. But like in terms of his skills away from the puck, I would say that they're okay.
He makes great plays to steal the puck.
So there's some really good parts of his defensive game in that he's great at stealing the puck. And he's, you know, there's no one better at advancing the puck out of his own zone. So these are all massive defensive skills. And so when I don't when I rate him as a defensive player, I'm saying he's good, a good defensive player because of those other skills. But his play away from the puck is just average, and it's not bad. It's not like Sam. We're not talking Sam Gagner here. He's often on the right side of the puck, most often, but this time he wasn't. And you know that happens mm-hmm. now and then to every player.
It was particularly glaring in a 2-1 game.
Sure was. It was painful to see because you knew how much he wants to win the game.
Oh, yeah. The camera kept zooming in on him, and you could tell how frustrated and disappointed he was.
Yeah, he's trying to do too much, and they're dry, mm-hmm. you know, it's a mess. What do you think of that Friedman notion that Hitchcock, the rumor that Hitchcock thought about quitting? I mean, it was kind of a weird
thing. Oh, I missed that one.
Oh, it was in 31 Thoughts. When Hitchcock was watching the practice on Monday, there was a rumor apparently that he was thinking of quitting.
When he wasn't on the ice but was up in the stands watching it. Oh yeah.
I don't know. It sounded just like speculation. And it was presented as such. But this season is over. And that's my number, Bruce. It's 56 games in. My number's 56 and the season's done. Put a fork in it. It's just, it's done. It's so they just have to move out as many players as they can for draft picks. You know, it's funny because of course, the two players that are being talked about right now, Cassian and Benning, are the two players who actually have played well in the last month.
Well, they're the ones that have value.
Yeah. I guess.
They got a whole bunch of guys that have no value, and they have a bunch of guys with, you know, term left on their contract. That not only have no value in the short term, but in the long term, they're thwarts in terms of they're in the way of the Oilers being able to make moves because they got no cap space.
Yeah, they're just going to have a hard time. Would you move Cassian? I mean, the way he's playing? I mean, they need players next year, too. They got to win next year.
I get that. And he's playing his best hockey in 2 years this last little while. He's skating well, and he's involved in the games, and he's bringing his physicality, and he's been scoring some goals. Like, he makes mistakes, and I think he's always going to make mistakes. He's one of those players. But he brings a lot of positives on his good nights, and he's had quite a number of them lately. So that has value. I mean, maybe they could score a decent return in a trade for him, in which case then you got to think about it.
Like a second round pick.
Well, if it gets ramped up to a second, you certainly have to think about it.
Oh, I think so. Definitely.
As long as there's no salary retention. He has one more year to go at $1.95 million.
Just turned 28. Mm-hmm. He's probably trending towards the end of his NHL usefulness. So, although you never know because he can skate. But he plays a tough game, tough physical game.
Well, the team getting him now would basically be paying him 1 year and a little bit for 2 years worth of playoffs. So, if you're, you know, a contending team that felt that they needed help in the crash and bash part of the game, he might hold some value to them.
Yeah. What about Benning? Would you move him?
I wouldn't. I like Benning. And this is where I think the acquisition of Manning is going to cost them Benning because they have seven contracts on D, $2 million plus range contracts that carry over to next year. And I fear that the one they're going to have to move out because he has some value as a younger player and a right-hand shot and who's actually got some pretty good results over his 3 years for all that people who judge him by eye tend to judge him harshly. If you look at his numbers, he's more than held his own. And yet they may wind up keeping an inferior, older, more expensive left-hand shooting Brandon Manning because they can't get rid of him and wind up having to move a younger guy like Matt Benning. And that's just, I got no words.
All right. What's your number? What's your number?
Oh, I got a number. My number is one. We're number one. In the last five games, the Oilers have scored 12 goals, and they scored exactly one of those goals with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl watching from the bench as some of their teammates actually put the puck in the net that one time. And the other 11 goals have all been scored with both McDavid and Draisaitl on the ice. That is what the Oilers' offense has come down to, is almost literally the one-line team.
You know, we've had defensive miscues with Draisaitl and McDavid.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least they make up for some. I mean, the other guys, they never score.
A point that a fella, Joseph, I think it's Joseph JK on Twitter, was making. Yeah. And it's a point I've made before, and I think it's correct. I think when you have Draisaitl and McDavid together on the ice at the same time, I think there's some confusion on their defensive assignments.
I agree.
And it's one of the downsides of playing them together. And I think it's why we're seeing these gaffes from them a little bit. They just don't know what they're not. They're just, it's not rote. It's not routine. It's not stone cold without thinking what they're supposed to do out there on the ice. And the game happens so fast that
it's not,
they're going to get caught out now and then. And I just, you know, they're making the point that Crosby and Malkin rarely play together. I guess they did play together more in the early years, but I don't know. I'm just tired. I guess there's
well, at least they produce goals. Yeah. I mean, I understand why the coach would default back to them.
I still don't think it's the best thing for the Oilers anyway. It's,
the best thing for the Oilers would be to get some bloody wingers that could put the puck in the net.
Okay, here's the good news, Bruce. Bakersfield won again tonight.
Yes.
And Tyler Benson now has 40 points. A 20-year-old AHLer has 40 points in 47 AHL games. And I watched the two Bakersfield games from over the weekend. And I was left very impressed with Tyler Benson. He's he's not a speed demon, but he's very strong on his skates. He's very strong with the puck, and he's an exceptional passer of the puck. And that's all coming through this year in Bakersfield. He's just, he's every time the puck is on his stick, he's making the right play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's this notion of overripe. I don't know exactly how long people think players should play in the AHL, but if you look at, I was looking at Nashville, for instance, and all of their players, and that's a team I think that has a reputation for not rushing players, giving them farm team time. But most of them spend about a year in the AHL. It's not like you're down there 2 or 3 years and then you become a good NHL player.
Tampa, same thing.
You know, you spend a year there.
Yeah.
So to if Tyler Benson is going to be a good NHL player, he will have spent enough time in the AHL this year.
Yeah. Well, that was one thing.
I'd like to see, you know, him and Caleb Jones has spent enough time in the AHL. I don't know why he's not with the Oilers if they actually want to win some games. I'm still mystified by that. He's on the third pairing. You're telling me he wouldn't be better than Petrovic or Kevin Gravel. I mean, I just don't buy it. And so there's the good news is there's some players down there who could help.
Yeah. Well, and one piece of good news that I heard today, Keith Gretzky was interviewed on the Gregor Show this afternoon. And he spoke about how they'd actually already told Tyler Benson that he was staying down there for the whole year, that they thought that was the best development plan for him, to not count on getting a call-up in the future, and that they have an actual fixed plan for a young guy that doesn't involve rushing him up and then yo-yoing him around the lineup and into the press box and back to the minors and all around the mulberry bush. That seems to be their standard plan.
They're not going to
actually have a plan.
Around, eh?
Oh,
what a nightmare this development of Puljujärvi is. It's just
he's lost out there. He is lost.
Textbook on how to do everything wrong with a player, and they should send him to the quicker they send him to the AHL, the better. Anyway. Well, that's interesting about Benson. I mean, there's other. You know, there's not going to be a lot of players, obviously, who make it from the farm. But there's Benson and Caleb Jones are two obvious ones. You know, Yamamoto has a chance. And
Benson's actually 2 months older than Jesse Puljujärvi.
Yeah.
But because they sent him back to junior for 2 years and locked him in the AHL for one, he's not at a point where people are saying, geez, he's been around for 3 years already and he's not doing much. What the hell's going on? They're actually you know, we can look forward with anticipation to that time when Tyler Benson is deemed ready for the NHL.
Now, I didn't see tonight's game, but I was watching Sekera, and he looked, Bruce, and it's hard to tell because it's an AHL game, right? It's not an NHL game. But he looked to be moving better in those two games. But I was just
really skating.
He looked to be moving better than he had looked skated all last year when he looked like he was skating on one leg. Now, I don't, again, this was, he's playing against AHL players, and it's kind of hard to tell. But there did seem to be a fluidity and agility in his skating and his game that was missing last year. And I'll tell you what, if by some miracle this guy can come back and be 9/10 or even 4/5 of what he was before, and help the Oilers even on a third pairing. But if he somehow, like,
fine, that's a place for him right now.
Wow. That could be a huge thing. It's obviously it's too late this year, but if he's still got 2 years left on a really hefty contract, if they can, if they don't have to buy him out, if he can be a useful NHL player, that'll be a huge thing for the Oilers. And, you know, Sekera and Jones, if that's your third pairing next year, maybe that's not that bad.
Well, the other thing he's been moving in addition to his legs is the puck. Man, you watch some of the stuff he just does by rote. He goes into the corner, he gets the puck, he chips it out, and it's right on the stick of some guy that's actually skating in the right direction in the open, and out it goes. And he hits them with the passes, and he makes it look easy, but the good ones do make it look easy. And the not-so-good ones make it look real hard, if not impossible, as we've seen on too many Oilers.
Ethan Bear wasn't playing. I guess he's hurt. Oh, he played tonight. He got an assist.
Yeah, Sekera got an assist on the second empty netter. They won 4-1 with two empty netters in the last 40 seconds of play.
That's good. So there's some, you know, if Benson turns out to be a top six winger, right? And that's how he's trending to be right now. He's a 20-year-old in the AHL, and he's scoring, and he's got real offensive skills. I mean, he just looks like he could play with McDavid or Draisaitl as well, because he gives up the puck and he makes good plays, and he's like a younger, maybe younger, better version of Ty Ratty. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I guess it's next year. And I'm looking forward, actually, you know what? I'm looking forward to watching Bakersfield more games the rest of this year. And the playoffs. They're going to be in the playoffs, Bruce.
They're going to be in the playoffs.
And I'm excited to see that. I hope they send Puljujärvi down tomorrow, and maybe he can be part of that playoff team.
Well, that's one of the moves they could make to make their salary cap compliant with bringing up Sekera. It's bad that, despite their crappy position in the standings, they got no room at all to move on the salary cap. But so it is, you know. And as of tonight, Bakersfield is in first place in the AHL Pacific Division. 29 wins, 15 losses, and 3 other losses. So the 13 straight, they were just hanging around 500, but they turned it around in a big, big way. And they're doing it. The other guy of extreme interest to me down there is Shane Starrett, minder, who is posting these one goal against games like clockwork and really pounding up some great numbers in the last. Tonight he made 19 saves on 20 shots, and he made a 2-1 lead hold up all the way to the end, right, basically.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's – it's all, things are going so well there that you almost don't want to break. You almost don't want to disturb that team. Like it's one bit of good news. Nonetheless, I think Puljujärvi should go down there, and I don't know who they. I guess they could call up Spooner.
Well, they got a issue with the cap though, so they may or may not be able to bring up.
Oh, you're right. Spooner. No, Spooner didn't play. I think he got hurt last game, actually.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, there's. See what happens. Bruce, let's leave it there.
Yep. Seems like we always are scrambling around talking about our prospects at the end to try and put a happy face on the end of another sad podcast.
And we have a whole summer now to talk about that and playing out the string here. Now we got to get excited about the draft. Yippee. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.